Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, and as you know, I like to be called Paul, and it is another beautiful day in my consciousness. Hi, guys, and how are you doing today?
We are doing great. This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, who loves to be called Cher, and it's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. It's another beautiful day, in my consciousness. And as you know, Cher and I are the co-founders of a unity ministry called the Unity Center for Universal, youuniversalprosperity.com.
And the quick shortcut is ucfyp.com, and it'll take you right there. We're working on our product, Ma, so we're going to just wait to give that link until it's up and ready to roll.
Yeah, and if you get a fork in the road, take it.
Right.
Yogi Berra.
I was say, I think that was Yogi Berra. Great, great quote. Okay, I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you'll find my calendar, where I am doing Zoom meetings. Well, I'm always doing on Zoom, but it's a matter of who's sponsoring them. And I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you'll find the calendar, which lists the dates on which I'm doing Zoom lessons or Zoom classes. And of course, that's where you can find my absolute word, which is my version of Sunday's daily word. It is my weekly blog. And Cher, take it away as we do part four of
Free Will or Free Won't.
Free Will or Free Won't. A white paper, a white light paper written by the Reverend Bill Holton.
Absolutely. Yes. Very well done.
Well done.
And we use white light papers as it's the same concept as corporate does white papers, where it's a concise summarization of a major topic or a key issue. And free will continues to come up in our classes, and I'm sure it does in yours as well, Paul, yeah, as people questioning, do we really have free will?
Yes, indeed. And in our classes, it's usually in juxtaposition to, does God have control over our lives? God's will.
Exactly, right. God's will versus our will. Yeah, uh-huh. Absolutely.
And that's not what we're talking about here.
No, we're talking about our ability to make the choices. Are our choices really free will or not? And the three of us have had some really interesting deep dive discussions on that. So this is kind of fun for us to dig in.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So for new listeners, I'm just going to pick up with one paragraph that sort of summarizes where we were. Even for those who aren't new listeners, it's always good to get caught up on where we left off. We're talking about what neuroscientists are telling us right now, because we always like to bring the science in to support our what we're talking about. So neuroscientists tell us that there's a time delay in the time it takes information out in the world to reach our conscious awareness, a nanosecond delay. And because our conscious awareness lags slightly behind what happens, about up to seven seconds, our subconscious has already encoded what happened, including its consequences, and compels us to respond in a certain way based on our past patterns and conditioning. Woo.
Yes, woo, right? Isn't that amazing? And I'm wondering about, it starts out saying there's a nanosecond delay, and then it says up to 7 seconds. So I'm wondering if that's really a nanosecond delay for our subconscious mind to be aware of it, and then it's 7 seconds for our conscious awareness. Bill, can you enlighten us on that?
That sounds logical. I'm not sure where they were headed with that, but certainly even with that, that study by Banks and Isham was done and appeared in Psychological Science in 2009. What's interesting is the 7 seconds piece there. Actually, there are neuroscientists today that say between 7 seconds and 10 seconds even.
And in our last show, by the way, we actually paused for 7 seconds. So
That's right. People
might want to go back and take a listen to that, because it's longer than you think.
Nope. So why don't we just do it right now? We're going to do a 7 second pause.
Again, right?
That's the delay between your subconscious mind making a decision and we, you, me, being aware of it. So here we go. Here's 7 seconds. There you go. Seven seconds. Wow. That's not even 10 seconds. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. And this is why we're questioning what we think of as conscious free will. Carry on.
So jumping down then, the researchers found that it was possible to predict from subconscious brain signals which option participants would take up to 7 seconds before they consciously made their decision. Normally, researchers look at what happens when the decision is made, but not at what happens several seconds before. The fact that decisions can be predicted so long before they are made is actually an astonishing finding. Micro patterns of activity in the frontopolar cortex were predictive of the choices even before participants knew which option they were going to choose. That just freaks me out. I'm sorry, that just freaks me out.
Well, and so the good news is it's at least our own subconscious mind that's making decisions, not someone else or not a super mind, but still freaks me out.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that too, folks, as you know, is that the subconscious is just filled with self-preservation patterns. Of course, that's a pattern that has evolved and stays with us after all these centuries of human development. And it's for our own wellness and security when you think about it.
Well, it's for survival. And as I mentioned in the previous show, survival is all about the prime directive of reproducing ourselves. Mm-hmm. Everything is biologically and genetically geared to survival.
Yep.
That's true. Yeah, it sure is. So research by John Dylan Haynes and colleagues shows that the and this was done in 2008, shows that subconscious brain activity predicts even up to 7 seconds ahead of time, how we decide anything. So again, this supports that same research. The work calls into question the consciousness of our decisions, get this, and may even challenge ideas about how free we are to make a choice at a particular point in time. If anybody's disturbed, that's okay, we are too.
So this is where, as we talked about last week, precision of language is important because of what people might be reading into this because of their bias, right? So this should say, may even challenge our ideas about how consciously free we are to make a choice at a particular point.
Yeah.
Because it is me making the choice
right
in my subconscious mind and I'm not conscious of it.
Right. And as we feel, we've kind of come up with the belief, I guess I can share that, is that it's influenced as opposed to, quote, the word free, which leaves so much subjectivity to it. It's influenced by so much that's already within us.
Exactly.
It's still us, but it's so influenced.
When we become aware, when we're in this, when we're making a choice, I think this is another place where it's important for us to question that choice before we move forward, because we didn't have much conscious activity in making that choice.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah. And I like that. Yeah, you're right.
And where you're getting, folks, is just because you know us, is that we find it very difficult to read research like this or to read anything like this written by other people without our making comments about it, because there are so much other information that needs to be shared, like Paul just shared, with instead of making a choice, a conscious choice, putting the word conscious in there, which is where we are because we've had some experience going through the data like this. And of course, we're reading just like we did with the Fillmore readings or with the Spinoza readings. You'll hear us continue to make comments like this and actually stop in the middle of sentences or after a particular comment, so that you guys not only know where we are in our thinking, but have a broader bandwidth of thinking.
So that's a really important point, Bill. I'm hoping what we're demonstrating when we're reading material like this, that people will start doing that themselves.
Yes.
Questioning what they're reading as they're reading it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because you want to take all the different things you've learned and you're reading and put it together into what you believe.
Exactly.
So that's the key.
And of course, what you'll find when, for those of you who have read our readings, Paul's and Sharon and my readings, is that our sentences tend to be longer.
And actually, I listened to that last week when you said that, and I'm actually working towards making them shorter, cutting up the long sentences into short, declarative statements that in themselves are understandable. I know I start to get lost in the really long sentences unless I wrote it.
Yeah. Right. And that's true. That is so true. And sometimes you have to read something two or three times to get there.
Right.
Here's a quote by John Dylan Haynes. I didn't read that yet, I don't believe.
You did not.
He says, and he's the neuroscientist at the Max Planck Institute for Human Cognitive and Brain Sciences in Leipzig, Germany, who led this study that we've been talking about. And he said, quote, "We think our decisions are conscious, but these data show that consciousness is just the tip of the iceberg."
I want to make a note of this because this study was in 2008. The citation you did previous to this in this paper was 2009.
A year later, so, yeah.
So 2009 was a repetition confirming what was found in 2008.
Right.
And actually, Bill, if you're going to rework this paper, I would switch those.
So that they're in order. Yeah. That's true, because we're coming up to a 2012 one pretty soon.
Even better. Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay. Findings by Voss and Paller, 2009, corroborate, there's some more corroboration of that research as to how our gut intuition works. It suggests the subconscious brain accesses intuition, our gut feeling about something, by tapping into memories, information, and patterns embedded within our subconscious rather than at a conscious level.
I wish we could come up with a better definition of intuition beyond gut feeling. Yeah. So we all have that. What is your gut knowing? Mm-hmm. And of course, in our Unity classes, we get entangled a little bit between spiritual intuition and human intuition and what makes them different and the same. But so what is this intuition thing? And this isn't the time to talk about it.
Right.
Now I'm sorry I brought it up.
I know. We do use the term intuitive wisdom. Yeah. But that still leaves a lot to be described.
Oh, wait. Let's don't brush that off. So you and Bill talk about intuitive wisdom instead of intuition.
Right. The intuitive wisdom is what you know that you may not even know you know.
So that's an up-leveling of that definition.
Yeah. Our definition of intuition is that intuition is logic in a hurry.
Yes.
That's our fun definition.
Or logic that happens quickly.
Yeah. Definitely. Now here we go to 2012. One of the most prominent neuroscientists and writers is Sam Harris, who in his 2012 book, Free Will, alludes to the fantasy of conscious choice. Don't you just love that phrase? The fantasy of conscious choice.
Bill, is that your words or did he call it fantasy?
That's his, yeah.
Sam Harris, I love it.
Yeah.
And I hate it.
That's interesting how that happens, isn't it? He believes that there's absolutely no such thing as free will. And I quote, "We need our beliefs to track what is true," Harris says. "Illusions, no matter how well-intentioned, will always hold us back."
Oof. Okay.
For example, we currently use the threat of imprisonment as a crude tool to persuade people not to do bad things. But if we instead accept that human behavior arises from neurophysiology, he argues, then we can better understand what is really causing people to do bad things despite the threat of punishment and how to stop them. Let me just finish this quote. We need to know what levers we can pull as a society to encourage people to be the best version of themselves they can be.
I agree with him, what he's saying, and this goes back to what I said before, because I think people who are consciously aware of the consequences of bad behavior, when their mind subconsciously makes the choice to do something bad and they become aware of it, that gives them a point of control of being able to say, yeah, I have this urge to smack somebody silly, but I'm not going to do it, or rob the bank, or steal the potato chips from the convenience store or something like that. There's that, the decision comes up, but you don't have to follow it.
Right. And there's a moral code in there somewhere that maybe that's the piece that's not functioning for people, giving them to make that decision.
Yeah. So there, that's probably another 15 programs of morality. Yeah. And that might be something worth exploring. And let's go on.
Yeah, which is kind of, I think, what he's talking about, to understand why people do things, even though they know there's going to be a consequence. How do we deal with that, is what he's saying.
Yeah, this is going to date this particular podcast, guys, but I sort of get the feeling that the folks out there during this pandemic who aren't wearing personal protective equipment might come up with the same conclusions. I know science says this, but...
What is the motivating factor behind people choosing not to believe science?
Oh, we have to kind of take them for their word, in a sense that we live in a free country, that yes. That's an underlying strong belief within people, and yet they totally ignore that we have to follow traffic laws or there's a punishment. Right. And we're not as free as we're misled to believe.
And freedom comes with responsibility. Freedom without responsibility is chaos.
Right.
There's a responsibility of interconnection of people if we're going to live in that, quote, freedom.
Right. And why should a person get mad on an airplane when they're required to wear a mask, when they're already required to wear a seatbelt and required to not smoke? And if you do either of those, if you don't do either of those, you can get thrown off the plane. So now we're going to add wearing a mask to it. What is your problem, buddy?
Right.
So
there's something faulty, or there's not to say faulty. The information they hold in their subconscious mind is conflicting with what's being required of them.
Right.
Yeah.
And it really comes back to that confirmation bias again. Once you get a belief, people dig in. They don't want to give it up.
Yep. Going back to the title of this white paper, Free Will or Free Won't, perhaps what we're just talking about here is a free will or free don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Chair, you just triggered something in me, is that the more they're forced, or people try to force them to wear their mask, they fight back more. And that brings us back to our discussion of the adjacent possible.
Yes. There you go.
Wearing a mask is not in their adjacent possible.
Yep.
Right.
And so when they're forced to wear a mask, they entrench in not wearing maskness.
Yep.
Right. It's a clear example. That's great.
It's a perfect example of what happens. Yeah. Yep. Do we have time to do one more paragraph?
I think we do.
We'll rush. Because this is continuing with Harris's thought.
Right.
What's more, he says, as ordinary people come to better understand how their brains work, many of the problems documented by Vowles and others will dissipate. Determinism, he writes in his book, does not mean, quote, that conscious awareness and deliberative thinking serve no purpose, end quote. Certain kinds of action require us to become conscious of a choice. This goes back to what you were saying, Paul.
Yeah.
Certain kinds of action require us to become conscious of a choice, to weigh arguments and appraise evidence. True, if we were to put in exactly the same situation again, then 100 times out of 100, well, we would make the same decision, just like rewinding a movie and playing it again. But the act of deliberation, the wrestling with facts and emotions that we feel is essential to our nature, is nonetheless real.
Well, and I think that's a good place to end this particular metaphysical romp as we pivot to the absolute word. And the absolute word, of course, is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. So this comes from Sunday, July 12th, 2020. The word is guidance. I use divine ideas to guide myself. I use divine ideas to guide myself. Guidance is easy to find in the outer world. Maps and GPS technology help me navigate my way just about anywhere. Everywhere I go, there are signs marking streets, adorning storefronts, and providing just about every kind of information and opinion imaginable. Spiritual guidance is often subtle and is more valuable. This guidance can be a persistent tug on my attention, a gut feeling, or intuition, there's that intuition again, or even a dream as I sleep. I invest my attention on my inner knowing based on divine ideas. I step out in faith to move my steps in its direction. I know the divine ideas of love, wisdom, understanding, and will are aspects of my divinity. I consciously use them to guide myself toward blessings of greater peace, love, and prosperity. I use divine ideas to guide myself. And this would be a good moment to remind people, instead of intuition, you guys use the terminology.
Intuitive wisdom.
Intuitive wisdom. I love that. And that must be using understanding as well, right?
Definitely.
Yes. And so ends another Metaphysical Romp 2. I had fun. I know Bill and Cher did, and we hope you had fun listening to us. Thank you, listeners, for listening. For now, this is Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. Paul, signing off. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ciao.